What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening.
You
are now
listening
to the Feminist Bar Podcast. Feminist Bar Podcast.
What is good? What is popping? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tina Tuimaka, aka for today, your favorite abortion advocate, after my guest, of course. I am here with Marie. Marie, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself? You've been here before, but really excited to have you back.
Yeah, I am. You know, I've been here before, been graced by your hosting. I am Marie Simon, but you can call me Marie. And if I was to characterize myself, I think I would just say I'm someone who's deeply immersed in reproductive justice in whatever shape or form that looks like. The work that I do really spans different spectrums from kind of abortion work, contraceptive work, all the way to kind of menstrual health and hygiene. My obsession really is policy and kind of understanding the ways in which us as human beings accept certain policy and inform certain policy that then impacts, you know, the livelihoods of people in our communities. But yeah, I think just generally that's who I am. I wear multiple hats and explore these areas in different ways. But the gist of it all is that I'm really passionate about reproductive justice because I think it's a way to really hone in on people's autonomy and agency as human beings, which I think is crucial to their survival.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for being here. So today we are going to be talking about abortion advocacy in Africa, right? So if you're listening to this, you probably know that in several African countries, most of them actually, abortion is illegal. And speaking specifically from Zimbabwe, because that's where we are from, we are actually regulated by an act that was enacted in 1977. So that's a long time ago, right? So there's a big issue around the policing of women. There's a big issue around the enactment of laws that help women. There's a big issue around like us, the people, on an interpersonal level, and the stigma attached to abortion and the way that we talk about abortion, the way that we talk about reproductive justice as a whole. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that. And the first thing that I'm going to ask you, Marie, is what does abortion advocacy look like in Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll start off by highlighting that it's very much present, and it's honestly one of the locations where I would say abortion advocacy is the most pertinent. A lot of people, I think, when they are looking at getting into this type of advocacy or are interested in finding out what exactly is going on, have the impression that there is no abortion advocacy going on and we're all kind of the same and all of that stuff. But I think, you know, in the context of Africa, there's a lot of heterogeneous communities, and so the advocacy is very much strong in there. In terms of the nitty-gritties of what it actually looks like, I think similar to abortion advocacy in different parts of the world, it's very visceral and very much derived from lived experiences, because at the end of the day, abortion is a healthcare practice, and the lack of access to this healthcare practice means people die, people get very ill, people's life trajectories are really impacted in negative ways. And so a lot of the advocacy, I would say, that I've observed in the context of Africa comes from this perspective of, I'm not even just hearing it theoretically, I know someone, you know, because if it's one in four, you know someone who has either wanted an abortion, has had an abortion successfully or unsuccessfully, things like that. But then I also think in the context of Africa, what's the added layer that's a bit different is obviously, you know, women and their subjugation has meant that they are struggling to access resources just more generally. So a lot of the advocacy also includes, listen, we don't just want the legislation to be changed, but we also need to be able to access the resources should the legislation be changed. Because I think in an already resource quote, not resource poor, because we have a lot of resources. I just think in a context where the resources are not being adequately distributed to the populations, you also have to negotiate the fact that, okay, on paper, something could mean this, but when it comes to actually accessing it, like, is there transportation? Do I feel safe going there? Do I have people to take care of my business when I go? Things like that also have to be taken into consideration. So I've seen a lot of that, especially in Southern Africa, where people are also advocating not just for legislation to change, but also for the lived experiences of those who need access to abortions is improved upon so that they can actually access them.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned how we're not only dealing with it at like a legal or a policy level, but also like among us as a group. So I think like with any type of advocacy or really any type of social justice issue, like I always look at it in three layers, right? I look at it from an institutional perspective. I look at it from a group level, and then I look at it from an interpersonal level. So when I think about abortion advocacy, right, I am thinking about, lobbying to the parliament. I am thinking about, changing the laws, right? Doing research on which countries have the most comprehensive abortion laws, taking lessons from Latin America, who I would say right now has been probably the most successful in their abortion advocacy, right? And then on a group level, to me, it looks like abortion storytelling. It looks like creating communities that make it possible for women to get abortions comfortably and guilt-free, right? So that's intervention methods like having abortion doulas, right? Having abortion support groups, having more focus on abortion aftercare. That for me on a group level is a way to say, hey, it's okay if you want to get an abortion, and there's people that are going to be there for you. There's people that are going to support you in a similar way as they would if you had given birth, right? And then at an interpersonal level, I think that looks like looking at ourselves, right? Really looking inward to say, if I want to get an abortion, that's okay, right? If I get multiple abortions, that's okay. I should not feel guilty, because when we are guilty within ourselves, we then also project those values onto other people, right? Yeah. So I think abortion advocacy goes up as high as parliament and organizations and just as inward as like us, right? Figuring ourselves out. And then also just even when we talk about it at a group level, thinking about the way that we speak about abortion, the language that we use, the tone that we use, right? The values that we attach to it, the kinds of people that we're saying get abortions. I think those are things that we need to eliminate. And all of those are a part of abortion advocacy, because we could have laws enacted today that will allow us to have safe abortion, right? And still face so many other obstacles, right? Face obstacles in healthcare. Face obstacles at a community level, you know, being ostracized, and just face challenges ourselves, making the decision to say, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to stick by it. So yeah, I definitely love what you said about the different levels. And I'm going to kind of move on to the next question, which is, what are the biggest barriers to reproductive justice in this region? I guess.
it's at those different layers, but I would say, you know, at the end of the day, the most toxic component would be that interpersonal layer, because I think in the context of Africa, but I think also more generally, but I'll speak more to the African context, you have purity culture, and I think purity culture is the child of these two kind of ideologies coming together, where you've got, you know, in the African context, I won't take away the agency and responsibility that we do have in some of our cultural practices that kind of place women in a subjugated position and deem their value in society based off of their reproductive potential. And not just women, I think everyone is demarcated by their reproductive potential. So you find that people who steer away from that either because they don't want to have kids, or they have an abortion, or they identify different to what they've been assigned at birth, all of those people are seen as, you know, vagabonds. They've done something wrong. But then you also have these colonial imports that come in, you know, and I think the success of colonialism really rested upon its ability to transpose its ideologies onto what already existed, and in turn then exacerbate that. And I think you've got, you know, the Judeo-Christian mindset that really says, you know, innocence denotes deservingness. And if you don't fit into what is described as innocent, then you are not deserving. And I think in many ways, you know, back to reproductive potential and things like that, if you're not having sex, quote unquote, recklessly, which is what many people think leads to abortions, if you are, you know, honoring your reproductive potential, you're having sex within the context of marriage, then you're innocent and therefore you're deserving of certain rights. But when you don't do that, then you're not deserving. So now you have these two things coming together, and you have, you know, this importance placed on reproductive potential, and then an innocence that's attached to it. And so when someone comes and says, I want to have an abortion, or I want to have access to contraceptives, is you are derailing from what you are supposed to be, and therefore you are not deserving of autonomy, you're not deserving of healthcare, you're not deserving of these services. And I think when I say on the interpersonal level where it becomes a problem is, all of the stuff comes from the top, it's institutional, but we survey ourselves without even being paid, you know, and like that manifests itself in the internalized stigma that we then project onto other people, because there's this idea that we have to keep maintaining, you know, the status quo. And so we really police people and their choices, we judge people, we judge ourselves, and we create these environments where, like you're saying, even if it's legal, even if the institutions say, okay, fine, you can have this service, we ourselves are still preserving this purity culture. And I think that's the biggest deterrent towards reproductive justice. And like in Africa, I think it manifests because we are so attached to holding onto culture, which, you know, it has its explanations and all of that, but there's this idea of this is who we are, when really it's not. And I think what's also important to know is human beings create culture, so we can change it, but we don't want to accept that, and then we don't get access to reproductive services.
Yeah. You know what? This answer has left me kind of at a loss for words, because now in my head, I'm like, even when I think about like, what are the obstacles towards reproductive justice in Africa? I'm thinking literally at the core of it all are these harmful religious and cultural beliefs that we hold. Right? Because yeah. Even if we want to say that the issue is the lawmakers, the issue is the policymakers, mm-hmm. the issue is the people making important decisions in politics, the people sitting at the tables, at the end of it all, those people believe these things. And that is why mm-hmm. they support them, right? That is why they perpetuate them in their laws and in their policies. So really at the core of it all, I think is really that. And then you have the issue of, and I don't know if this is something that people in other countries, specifically Western countries, speak about, mm-hmm. but the way that people center themselves in lawmaking mm-hmm. and policymaking, right? The way that they center themselves, the way that they center their beliefs is something that I think is a really big part of the corruption culture that we are facing in Africa, specifically in Zimbabwe, right? Where people will go out of their way to create a law, go through the law process, create a policy, go through all the little steps and all the little bureaucracy issues to make it happen, simply to support their own personal causes, simply for personal gain. Exactly. That is very scary to me.
Yeah, people I think have an entitlement to their beliefs has to be everyone's beliefs, and that's not the way things work, especially within the context of healthcare, because you can decide, you know, you want to have veneers like at the dentist and someone else doesn't want to, but you know, you can't go and force that onto other people. And I think people need to understand that this is healthcare. It's not your, you know, do I like the color blue or not? So, yeah.
Right. What's interesting though, is usually when you have people centering their struggles or their beliefs, things tend to serve them more. So this also mm-hmm. speaks to the lack of women in politics and the lack of representation mm-hmm. in lawmaking in you know, these African countries, that there was no woman in the room when this decision was made. So of course, it's not looking out for any woman's interests. And something interesting mm-hmm. that I was reading about, with Zimbabwe being really a high conflict zone, with, I guess, not poor resources, like you said, but mismanaged resources. Sometimes the way it works is when we are receiving aid from certain countries, the aid comes with certain conditions, right? So if we are receiving aid from a Western country that is in itself battling about safe abortion rights and is trying to block women from accessing safe abortion, e.g. parts of America, right? When we are receiving aid from those people over the last year, for example, hey, we're going to give you $1 million for COVID relief grants, and a really big condition that we have in here is that you don't provide family planning for women, is that you don't perform abortions at your institution, right? And one might think, that that doesn't necessarily affect us because abortion is already illegal in Zimbabwe. But I am always saying, right? Family planning is sex education, is abortion advocacy, is reproductive justice, is fertility management, is childcare, is, right? Everything is all connected.
Yeah.
When one thing is not working, or when you're not being provided a service prejudice-free from one place, you can almost always, always believe that that place is also not providing a good service for people that want anything related to their body.
Yeah. No, 100%. I agree. Like, it's just, it's very intertwined. And I think people need to understand that, because sometimes people also have an opinion and say, well, what does it matter that I have this opinion? But like you're saying, from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top, it's all intertwined into these personal beliefs. And, you know, I'm going to be invested in this is what I'm caring about. And that has ramifications for people who you don't even think, you know, it's going to impact. So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I am going to move on to the very last question, which I have a lot of difficulty with as someone who has done field work and has actually spent a lot of time in rural areas, right? Which is, how do we make our abortion advocacy intersectional? And when I talk about intersectionality in the context of African countries, sometimes I feel like our intersectionality is not the same as the first world or the Western intersectionality, only because while there's a lot of focus on kind of like gender and sexuality in the West, I think most of Africa being rural, there's a lot of exclusion of rural women in the way that we perform our activism, in the way that we even do our evidence-based programming, so many things moving digital. Like, I just feel that a lot of the feminist movement can do more for rural women. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's complicated, and I'm always worried about like getting too theoretical, because I don't know, I think when you come from a place where your lessons came from experiences, you don't want to theorize too much about certain things. But I think just what I've observed kind of in the work that I do, and in completely maybe a different side of reproductive justice and menstrual health, is sensitizing people to the fact that, you know, abortion is healthcare, certain things are healthcare, and removing this identity factor of reproductive potential from the conversation. So, for example, when we're kind of, what I've seen has worked in terms of including everyone when doing kind of menstrual health workshops, is obviously you want to go in there and be like, here are the products, this is what you need to do, A, B, C, D. But a lot of them are under the impression that they shouldn't even be asking for this, because they haven't perceived it as healthcare. For them, it's a identity thing, and it's a political thing by extension of that. And so I think removing kind of this identity part of things when advocating is really, really important. And I know that sounds like a juxtaposition, because for sure, a lot of these things are politicized by the very fact that, you know, people making these decisions also want to keep people in certain places and certain positionalities and stuff like that. But I think it's really important when we're doing this work to center it as a healthcare practice and educate people from that perspective. Because if there's one thing that people know they have a right to or are willing to actually fight for is their right to life. I think that's been inherent in us throughout history, regardless of, you know, what era it was and stuff like that. Everyone knows if someone is not well or they need a procedure, they deserve access to that. And I think that's a language everyone understands. So it's really important, I think, to center healthcare because that takes away, I think, in many ways, like I said, this theoretical inclination we have as women who are not in these rural areas, you know, and are exposed to some of these dogmatic thinkings that come from, you know, Western discourse and stuff like that, that also isolate people who have lived experiences. And I think the one thing that's resonated across the board, whether that is women in rural areas, or even if we're looking at the intersectionality of, you know, gender and things like that, healthcare is what is crucial. And I think we need to stop, we need to get to a point where abortion and contraceptives and things like that are not being looked at as this very highly politicized thing, and instead are like, someone needs to go to the dentist, they will go to the dentist. And I think communicating it in that way means more people feel like they are part of the conversation, but also those people who are opposed to the accessibility can also look at it from a different perspective.
Right, right. I love that, because I think that then speaks to the language, really. Like, the way that we have kind of been taught to understand it, I think is also why it is so political. And I remember putting out a tweet that said, you don't have to tell anyone about your abortion, whether they're your partner, whether they're not your partner. Like, your abortion is your business. And, it, you know, like, the men were going mad in the comments. As per usual. And
that's this, new.
Right? And this one person quoted the tweet and they were like, Think of it this way. If you had your appendix removed, how many people in the street would you feel it was necessary to tell that you got your appendix removed? Abortion, like any other medical procedure, is your business, personal, and unless like relevant, you don't need to be bringing it up, right? That was a great way to look at it. I'm sick, I'm going to the doctor. I have a flu, I'm gonna go get medication, so I'm not gonna have a flu anymore.
You don't go in and announce all the time, you know, that you've got a flu and you're taking medication after going to the doctor. So I also think, it's, again, people's rights to their bodies and sharing information about their bodies is important. And when it's healthcare, it's just healthcare.
Yeah. I love that. Well, we have now reached the end of this conversation. It was amazing, as per usual. I love how your mind works. I love the way that you articulate these things. You've given me a lot to think about. You know, like, there are so many, like, podcasts out there, right? Simply dedicated to abortion, because there's just so much to talk about. Like, there's so many different little facets that we are yet to uncover and chat more about and eliminate and build and it's so exciting. I hope that you plug the podcast that you host, actually, as we close off this episode. So I'm gonna let you share any last words and plug anything that you wanna plug.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, thank you for inviting me to have this conversation. Sometimes it's nice to not have to write things down and just talk. I think a podcast that I've hosted, Mind Your Uterus Podcast, just talks about, kind of like you're saying, on that communal level, abortions and getting that support and the different facets of what abortion advocacy looks like. And what I appreciate about, I think, the first season was its conversations with different people from different places with different entryways into the space. And so I think that's also really beneficial, because I find that sometimes when we're doing activism, because it's very personal, sometimes people fail to attach or to familiarize themselves with something because it feels so foreign, because of the approach that the person takes. So I think the conversations with different people can help in kind of figuring out, okay, how do I process this internally? And then, yeah, I think I would say we still all have a long way to go. And I don't even think that's, it's a statement for those people who are completely against it or those people completely for it. I think all of us, like you're saying, consistently need to reflect, hold ourselves to account and understand how we contribute to some of the harmful practices we experience in our day to day. So yeah, that's really it from me. Thank you. And I'll wrap it up there.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here. Remember, everybody, every day that you wake up is a beautiful day to advocate for safe abortion. And that's a wrap on this episode.